This is something that I think kind of circled around the peripheries of my experience growing up. It was not talked about directly until I was older, and I sort of first heard about it through my mother rather than her parents. There's an expression among older Japanese Canadians, Japanese Americans, shikata ga nai, which means it can't be helped. And I think that sums up a lot of kind of the ethos or sort of the social, yeah, I guess it sums up a lot of the feeling that I think a lot of older generations had towards what happened to them or their parents. This kind of like, we have to just keep our chins up, right, and keep moving forward and not dwell on the past. And I think a lot of the work done by younger Japanese Canadian, Japanese American writers and artists has been to kind of reclaim some of these stories and re-explore them. And so that was certainly what happened to me. When I was older, my grandparents did open up more and tell me about the camps, and their memories kind of became this really important inheritance to how I thought of myself and the world.
So the first poem in Burning Province is titled 150 Pounds, a reference to the weight limit of the belongings that mm-hmm. Japanese Canadians were allowed to bring with them into the internment camps. And the final stanza of that poem reads, "What matters is not what you bring, but what you keep. She was there, he was too." And I interpreted this in part as like a thesis for your poetry project, keeping your family in your poetry. And I'm wondering, at what point did you realize that your poetry might be the reliquary or the elegy for this part of your family's history?
I think I began to realize it perhaps most strongly in that book when my grandmother passed away. And I began to realize that like part of what I felt was a responsibility for me was to kind of elegize living memory as everything passes away into archive or documentation of various sorts. What does it mean that we no longer have like these living vessels of memory with us, these people we love? That act of care is something that Burning Province is very invested in. And something I continue to try and grapple with. I don't know how effectively.
Very effectively, I would say, as somebody who really enjoys your poetry.
Thank you.
So form is such an integral part of your poetry, and I think very intentionally so. Mm. You've expressed an interest in the, and I'm putting quotes here, politics of form. Mm. Could you speak a little bit about why form is a major consideration in your work and how form can be political?
Yeah, these are such excellent questions. You two have done so much research. I'm kind of awed and very honored. I'm very interested in the way certain traditional verse forms or inherited poetic forms, like you've probably read sonnets, right, or blank verse and stuff like that, can serve as metaphors, or the way form can serve as metaphors for various things in my and my family's experience. And so, for example, the sonnet, this very short, brief poem, you know, 14 lines, meter, often a rhyme scheme, a sharp turn at some point called a volta. I often, in this book, I conceptualize it as like a snapshot or a photograph. It also, to me, evokes the kind of like the space of the very small shacks in which these families were crammed, often two families to a shack. And it also serves as a kind of like signifier for the ways in which having your movement constrained, having your life constrained, creates psychological constraints that endure long after one has left the camps. In my first book, there's a very long blank verse poem, you know, blank verse, again, from Shakespeare, where I go on a road trip with my grandfather and visit all the internment campsites in British Columbia. I felt like the kind of pulse of the pseudo-pentameter there, it's more syllabic probably than iambic, but the pulse of that kind of like form, its pacing, helped recreate the kind of journey I was on in some way, effectively, psychologically, for the reader.
It's really interesting to think about because I do when I teach sonnet in British yeah. literature, that British Literature Survey teach it as a poem whose formal constraints are both restrictive but freeing.
Freeing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Freeing for the writer, especially,
yes,
I
yes,
think.
Yes.
And there's also, of course, all the ideological baggage that comes with these forms, you know, that when we look at the canon, we have mostly white men, mm-hmm. dead white men, writing these forms. And what interests me is like, how can I take these forms and use them to renovate them or change them or adopt them to bear the weight of my family's experiences?
I have a question again yeah. related to, I guess, both of our experiences
sure.
as instructors. In my experience, a lot of students who consider creative writing in school or who imagine a future as a writer tend to assume that fiction is the outlet for their creativity.
Right.
If you were to give a pitch to young writers for studying and writing poetry, what would you say?
I would say it's the other way of using language, like Howard Nemiroff said. You know, it is language at its most experiential rather than informational. And I think there's something very important about that. It's a way of remaking and renewing language in a time when language is being put to such terrible uses. And I think about what's happening in this country right now. The sorts of labels that are being applied to people, the sorts of language that is facilitating, you know, deportation and incarceration. I also think that poetry can, because of its unique relationship to language, its use of forms, you know, it doesn't have to be narrative necessarily in a certain way. It doesn't have to have the same kinds of structures that we get in so many other forms, in so many other, like, sorts of media. It can be really a way to understand yourself and how you fit into the world. There's this wonderful quote by bell hooks, and she's paraphrasing Thomas Merton, at the end of Teaching to Transgress, which is one of my favorite books about teaching. And she says, "The purpose of an education is to provide one with the tools by which to spontaneously and authentically define oneself in relation to the world." And that has been what poetry has been for me. You know, that's what poetry is for me. And I think it can be that for a lot of other people too. And I think, yeah, it's been my true education. I've done a lot of school, but my true education has been writing, reading, and thinking about poems.
How do you know when a poem is finished?
I think there are different metrics for that. For me lately, it's been, have I surprised myself? Have I discovered something? Because if I surprise myself, there's a good chance I'll surprise the reader. And this is paraphrasing Robert Frost a little. And I feel like because of the way I use poems, what I love about them, you know, this fact that they are a kind of education or a way of understanding one's relationality in the world, it's important to me that I discover something in a poem. And if I haven't discovered something in a poem about myself, about the world, about my family, then it's perhaps not done.